We're going to learn Daf Tezayin in Masechtas Chagiga. However, we're going to back up for a moment and just go back to the last line or last two lines of Tezvav Amud Beis, and we're going to start over there because that's actually really the beginning of what we're about to do. So, as you recall, the Gemara beforehand was discussing there were four people who went up to Shemayim in their human body form, and they came back. And not so successfully. However, the exception to the rule was Rabbi Akiva. So we're going to start with that line, two lines from the bottom of Tezvav Amud Beis. The Gemara says like this: Rabbi Akiva, Olo b'shalom v'yored b'shalom. He went up in peace and came down in peace, and he was okay, even though he went up to see the Shekhinah. V'alav akasav Omer. And about Rabbi Akiva, the pasuk says, Mashkeini acharecha nerutza, that you were a mashkin for me. Mashkeini acharecha nerutza, and after you, I will run. I will be pulled. Okay, so therefore, meaning that Rabbi Akiva was special, that he remained in his desirable position. Rabbi Akiva biksu malchay asharis ledoichvoy. Rabbi Akiva also, the malchay asharis tried to push him to not be successful. However, Amar lehem Hakadosh Baruch Hu says, henichu lezokein zeh, leave this person, this old man, sheroi lishtamish b'chvoyde, he is appropriate for him to use my covet. So therefore, he should not be affected negatively because he came up to Shemayim. Okay, now on the top of Tezayin of Aleph, the Gemara asks the question, my Dorish. What did Rabbi Akiva darshan? So Rashi has two different versions of exactly, precisely what the question is. Either, how did Rabbi Akiva recognize where the Shekhinah was, so that he knew not to look, because the problem was, once they looked, that's what caused Ben Zoyma, for example, not to come out of it 100%. Or the other way Rashi learns is, how did he know not to make the same mistake as Acher? So for purposes of reading the Gemara, we're going to use Rashi's first pshat. Again, how did Rabbi Akiva know not to look in the first place? So that is easier to read in the Gemara. So the Gemara says like this. Amar Rabbi Bar Chana. So Rabbi Bar Chana says, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, he darshan the following pasuk. Va'osam erivivayis kodesh. And he came from within the myrids, meaning the multitudes of holiness. So we darshan, Rabbi Akiva darshan, oishu b'ravava shaloi. He is a sign in his myriad, in his, I know the article says myriads of people, that's the word that they use, but it's just saying that in his group. In other words, Rabbi Akiva knew, darshan, based on this pasuk, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was always surrounded by a big group of malachim. So therefore, by seeing this big group of malachim, Rabbi Akiva was able to recognize, oh, there's the Shekhinah, I know not to look over there. That's the proper place. Or, he knew that if that's where the Shekhinah is, I shouldn't look. And that's the essential drasha. The Gemara is going to bring various psukim now, but that's the idea. The idea is, he was able to recognize where the Shekhinah was, and Memela, once he knew that's where the Shekhinah was, he knew that it was inappropriate for him to look. Like Moshe Rabbeinu also, didn't look directly at the Shekhinah. So here's another pasuk. Rav Avuah brings a different pasuk. Dogo Mirvava, it's a special sign in his group, and he says, "Dugma hu b'ravava shaloi," that there's something that looks like the Shekhinah. There's a dugma, something that looks similar to the Shekhinah in that area. And again, that's why Rabbi Akiva didn't look in that area where there was a group of malachim. Reish Lakish Amar, Hashem Tzvaka Shemoi, that the pasuk says that Hashem with his legions is his name. Adoin hu b'tzva shaloi. He is the master with his legions. So again, they knew that there was a group over there. Rabbi Chiya Baraba says the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Also notice, by the way, it's also the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Another drasha says in the pasuk, Loi beruach Hashem. Hashem is not in the wind. Va'acha ruach rash. But after the wind is going to come a noise. Loi berash Hashem. But Hashem is actually not in that noise. Va'acha rash eish. After the noise comes a fire. V'loi be'eish Hashem. Hashem is not in that fire. Va'acha ra'eish. Kol demama. But after the fire then comes this quiet sound. Daka. A thin, quiet sound. V'hine Hashem over. And that's when Hashem comes. So Hashem is actually in the quiet part, you know. So after you have the whole entourage and all the foot soldiers and everybody's running around, then it gets quiet, and that's where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, and that's where Rabbi Akiva was able to recognize that there's a Shekhinah, again, the same idea, and therefore he knew not to look. The other, just as a general rule, again, as we said, Rashi had a second pshat in the question, well, how did Rabbi Akiva know not to make the mistake? So the idea of all this psukim is that he understood that Hashem was in a special aloof position, that there was no other malach or no other entity or deity that could possibly be on the same level as HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So once Rabbi Akiva knew that Rasha, he knew not to make the same mistake as Acher. Because if you recall, Acher's mistake was that he saw the Metatra and he saw the Malach over there and thought that that Malach could possibly be equal to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that was the mistake that Acher made. Rabbi Akiva, based on these psukim, he always knew that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is above. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with his legions. And that's how Rabbi Akiva knew not to make the same mistake as Acher. All right, a little bit easier Gemara now. Tana Rabbanon. So the Rabbanon, we learned, they taught us. Shisha Dvarim Nemru B'Shedim. There are six attributes that are said about Shedim. Shedim are these, I don't know what they are exactly, as we'll see. They're sort of these ghosts. I don't know what to call them. They're not ghosts, but they were a bria that was created Ben Ashmashois on Friday, as right at the end of Maisa Bereishis. So after human beings were created, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created these things. But there are six attributes that we know about them. As the Gemara says, Shloishik Malachi Ashar, three of those are similar to actually Malachim. The Shloishik Bnei Adam, and three attributes are similar to the way we recognize people. And the Gemara explains, Shloishik Malachi Ashar, the three that are similar to Malachim, Yehesh Lehem Knafayim, Kemalachi Ashar, they have wings, U'vitasin Misoifa Olam Vat Soifoi, and they are able to fly from one side of the world to the other side of the world, kemalachei hasharis, similar to malachim. The yoyim masha also lihi yois kemalachei hasharis, and they also know the future. They're able to see what's going on. So the Gemara says, yoyim salkadaitoch. Do they know? Nobody knows, right? That's the way the world is created. That the future is going to happen when it happens. Elo shoyim ma'achurei apargud kemalachei hasharis, but rather they're able to hear certain things from behind the curtain, whatever that's supposed to mean exactly, that they're able to hear what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has in store or has plans, like Malachi Asharis, meaning they have access to that part of Shemayim. In that respect, in those three respects, they're similar to Malachim. V'shloishik b'nei Adam, and they're in three respects, they're similar to humans, that is, oichlem v'shloishim, they eat and drink k'bnei Adam like people, parm v'rovim k'bnei Adam, they multiply like people so that they have relations, umesim k'bnei Adam, and then eventually they also die like people. So they have a lifespan, and they multiply like people. So that's about the Shedim. Now, shisha dvarim nemru b'nei Adam. There are six things, attributes that are said about human beings. Shloishik malachei hasharis, and three of those are actually similar to the malachim. Shloishik behema, and three of them are animalistic, are tied to this world. As the Gemara explains, shloishik malachei hasharis, in three respects, or three attributes are similar to malachim. First of all, yesh lahem das kemalachei hasharis. They're able to understand and communicate like malachei hasharis. They understand what's going on. Umahalchim b'kayim zekufa kemalachei hasharis, and we stand upright. And umasaprim b'loshan hakodesh k'malachei hasharis, and also we're able to talk loshan hakodesh, which is something special, unique up in Shemayim that the malachei hasharis talk. However, shloisha k'behema, in three respects, we're similar to animals, which is oichel v'shloisin k'behema, where three we eat and drink like a regular animal, parm v'rovim k'behema, and we also multiply like we sustain our numbers like animals, umaytzian rei k'behema, and we go to the bathroom like a behema. That's considered a complete human thing that doesn't exist by the malchei hasharis. Fine. Now the Gemara brings the last part of the Mishnah, which is kolam stakel b'dalat dvarim rosui loy shaloi b'ala olam. Either rosui or roy, depending on what the girsa is. We have the girsa rosui. It would be better, or it brings anger, that if he looks at the if you look at these four things. So now bishloima mala 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 mata mala ocher l'chay. So I understand why of the four things that we're not supposed to look into, we understand why we're not supposed to have what's above Shemayim, what's underneath, and what's going to happen in the future. I understand why we shouldn't be looking at those, because those are inappropriate. Those are things that we don't understand. El lifnim, but when we lifnim over here, the Gemara is understanding to me what happened in the past. Madahave have it happened already. What difference is make? Either we'll be able to figure it out, we'll know what happened, or it didn't happen. So why shouldn't we be able to look into this? Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Lozer, to Amr Tarvayu. So they both explain like this. Mashal Melech Basav Adam, it's like a regular king. Sha'amar La'avodov, that says to his servants, Banu li platrin gedolim al ha'ashba. He says, build me a big palace, but build it on top of a garbage dump. So hochu banu loy. So they did what the king asked, and they built the palace. So ein ritzoinai shal melech lahasker shame ashba. The king doesn't want anybody to talk about, when he talk about his palace, he doesn't want him to talk about the garbage dump that's underneath. So, okay, so without giving a precise pshat on this Gemara, the same idea is, so this world as we have it today is a perfect world in the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted it. Obviously, there are things for us to fix up that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created for us to do, but it's perfect in the sense that before this world was created, there were other worlds that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created and destroyed because he felt they weren't appropriate. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want us to discuss those things. That's not things that we're supposed to check into, figure anything else about them. We know that they're there, and that's the end of the discussion. So that's why the Gemara says it's inappropriate to talk about what happened. Just because it happened already, and whatever it was, it's still not something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to delve into. Then the Gemara says, brings the part of the Mishnah that says, Kol shelo chasal kavod koinoi, anybody who doesn't respect the honor of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, again, the same thing. Rosu yiloi shelo ba'olam, it brings the anger, it's better that he should not have been brought to this world. Maihi. So what is this thing that he's not caring about the kavod? Reb'ava omar zem stakel b'keshes. It's looking at a rainbow, which HaKadosh Baruch Hu created for, it's a special thing that we really shouldn't be happy that the rainbow is there. Rabbi Yosi Amar Zeh Ha'oiver Aveiro B'Seser. Somebody went and goes ahead and does an Aveiro in private thinking that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not going to see. So that's saying that you don't care about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, the Gemara explains, Mistak of Akeshes, looking at a rainbow is problematic. Tchsiv, Kamare Akeshes Asher Yiyah Ba'onon, the appearance of a rainbow in the clouds, V'yoyim Akeshem, on the day that it rains, Kein Mare Hanagis Soviv Hu, that the so too is the appearance around it, the light that's around it. Mare demus kvoid Hashem. You're looking at the kvoid Hashem. So the same way we just finished the Gemara about Rabbi Akiva and his friends who went up to Shemayim and understood not to look at the kavod of Hashem, not to look directly at Hashem. So the same thing over here also for us. So now maybe that's the reason why we had to learn the prior Gemara. For us, on our level, there are certain things that are, so to speak, HaKadosh Baruch Hu revealing Himself on this world. In a worldly manner. So those are things also that we shouldn't look at. We should understand these are not really things for us to stare at. So this, the rainbow also represents a kavod of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rabbi Yosef Omer, so Rabbi Yosef gave a different pshat, say, however, aveir b'seser. He says, someone who does an aveira in private. What's this talking about? Could the Rabbi Yitzchok? The drasha that Rabbi Yitzchok taught us, the Amar Rabbi Yitzchok, kolo over avera b'seiser, somebody who does an avera quietly, ki ilu doichek ragle shechina, this is pushing off the feet of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as we already learned earlier, that the world, the aretz, is the place where HaKadosh Baruch Hu rests his feet from the kisei HaKavod. Shenemar koyomar Hashem, Hashem said, Hashemayim kisi, the Shemayim is where my throne is, v'aretz adayim ragli, and the land is where I rest my feet. So if you're gonna go ahead and do something against HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you're actually, we're, and on this world where HaKadosh Baruch Hu rests his feet, you're saying, I don't want HaKadosh Baruch Hu's feet here. You're pushing them away. But the Gemara says, 1 second. Is that really a problem? Ain't he? But is that so? V'ha'omai Rebbe Law is talking. Imro Odom She Yitzroi Miskaber Olav. If a person sees that his Yitzhar is going to overwhelm him, and he's going to do an Aveira, so what should you do? Yelech Lamokam She'em Akirin Oysoi. You should go someplace that people don't know you. V'yalbash Shechoyrim. You should wear black clothing. V'yisatev Shechoyrim. You should wrap yourself in black. V'yasem Ashali B'chofetz. And you go ahead and you do what you need to do, whatever that Aveira is. And therefore, you're not going. And that way, you're not going to do the aveira outright, where people will know. So we see that the Gemara, according to Rebbe Law, is giving you advice of how to do the aveira, and the whole advice is based on the fact that you're going to go into a quiet place where no one's going to know you. So it seems exactly contrary to what we just said, that doing the aveira where no one knows you is worse. It seems to be worse because you're pushing away the shechina. So the Gemara answers like Kasha. It's not a contradiction. So what we're talking about over here is, and we're going to learn according to Rashi's pshat, it depends on whether the person is able to overcome that Yetzihara. Either, I'll add in a little bit of Tosfos over here, by going to that place and wearing the shchoirim and putting yourself down, usually that kind of thwarts the taiva to do the Aveira. But in any event, in a situation where the way Rashi learns is that you see, no matter what you do, you're still going to end up doing the Aveira. There's no way you can overcome it. You just feel like you have to do it. So then, Anachanami, it would be better to do it. It's better to do it quietly than to do it Befarhesia, where it could create a Chilul Hashem. But if you say to yourself, I could really restrain myself from doing this Aveira, but I'm going to do it in a way that I'll do it in a way that no one knows, so it won't be such a big aveira. That's the scenario where we say that person is pushing the Shekhinah away. That person is saying, "Oh, I'm going to do it so that no one will notice." But what are you talking about? HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees it, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows what you're doing. That's a disgrace to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's kavod, and that's something that we should not do. So that's what it depends on the situation. Okay. Darsh Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Nachmani. So Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Nachmani says like this. Miturgamine the Reish Lakish, he understood this from the Miturgamine of Reish Lakish. Call him a stack of a gimel dvarov, dvarim. If somebody looks at the following three things, Ain of Chaos, this weakens their eyes. Bekeshes, the rainbow, as we discussed before, Uba Nasi, looking at the Nasi, Uba Kayhanim, and Kayhanim, as Rashi explains, while they're duchening. So, the Gemara explains, Bekeshes, Tichsiv, Kemare, Hakeshes, like the pasuk we said before, when you see the rainbow, Asher Yiyah Ba'onan B'yom HaGeshem, when it's in the clouds on a rainy day, Hu Mare D'mus Kavod Hashem, it's as if you're looking at the Kavod Hashem, so you're not supposed to look at the Kavod Hashem, that's not good for your eyes. B'nasi, looking at the Nasi is problematic, Tichsiv, B'nasadcha Me'hoidcha Olov, Hashem is putting His honor on the Nasi, so you shouldn't be looking at the Nasi when He's in His glory. Hamastakel b'koyanim, and when we're talking about looking at the koyanim, b'zman shabes hamigdash kayom, it's talking about in b'zman hamigdash when it was around shahaya oimdim al duchanim, they were standing on their platforms umavorchin es yisrael b'shem hamafurosh, and they were saying Hashem's name. So since they were saying Hashem's name, as the Gemara explains, that or Rashi explains that the Shechina would rest on the knuckles of the koyanim. So basically, by looking at the koyanim's fingers, you'd be looking directly at the Shechina, which we learned to the Gemara earlier. That's not something that's appropriate. It's not something that we should do. Which is why, you know, the minhag is that the kohenim cover their hands with the talesim, but even so, you shouldn't look, and we cover our eyes also, exactly, so that nobody makes the mistake of accidentally looking at the kohenim during duchening. Okay, Darish Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Nachmani, another thing that he heard from the Miturgam of Reish Lakish. Maidach said, what does the pasuk says? Al taminu bara, don't believe your bara in bad. Al tiftachu ba'aluf, and don't be assured in the aluf is the people above, like the officers, the chieftains. So Omar, so he says like this: Im yomer lecho yetzahara chatoi. Don't, if the yetzahara comes and tries to tell you, don't go ahead and do an aveira. Hakadosh Baruch Hu moichel, and Hakadosh Baruch Hu is going to be moichel. It's not a problem. You could do the aveira now. You'll take care of it, and you'll do tshuva tomorrow. So al tamin. Don't trust the Yetzirah to do this. It's not going to work. That's why the pasuk says, "Shenemar al tamim bereah." Don't trust in the bad. That means that I could do the averus. The Gemara explains, "Ein ra el Yetzirah." When we say the ra, the trusting, you're trusting the Yetzirah. Shenemar ki Yetzir leif ha'odom ra. The creating, a Kodesh Baruch Hu created in the heart of a person ra, and the ra over here is referring to the Yetzirah. Don't trust the Yetzirah that he says, "Don't worry, you could do this averus. It's not going to be a problem." And then as the Gemara continues, "Ve'ein aluf al Kodesh Baruch Hu," and then it says, because the aluf, don't trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he's going to take care of it for you. The aluf is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, aluf na'iri ato, you are the chieftain of the young ones. Shema, because the Gemara says like this, Shema toimer mi may it be, a person can make the cheshbon, who's going to know? Who's going to, right, this ties into the Gemara before that, don't do an Aveiro in private. Who's going to know that I did this Aveiro? So the Gemara answers, Avne Beisoy, Vikairis Beisoy, Shal Adam, Hey Me'idin Boy. The stones of the house, or the beams of the house, are going to testify about what he did. Shenemar, Ki Even Mikir Tizak, or the stones from the wall are going to scream out, Ukapis Me'etz Ya'anenu. And the kapis is the wooden beams, the wooden chips of wood, are they going to answer? So when HaKadosh Baruch Hu answers, asks, what did this person do? Your house itself is going to testify about what the person, the house is a reference to being in private where no one else knows what you're doing. The beams of your house are going to be able to testify. That's one pshat. The Chachamim say even more than that. Nishmosei shel odom me'idaboy. Your neshama is going to be made about you. You yourself are going to testify. Shenemar mishkav mishkavto chekecha shamor. From lying in bed, your innards you should watch Pesach Picha. They're going to open your mouth. What object or what thing is in the lap of a person? That's your neshama. So your neshama itself is going to testify about what you do. The ones who testify are going to be the two malachim hamalavin oisai hein meidin boy. The ones that escort him, right? We always have a malach that escorts us. With us, there's always a malach with us. They're going to testify shenemer, because the pasuk says ki malachav his malachim yisabalach are going to say about you. The shmar b'chol derachecha, they're going to watch you in everything that you do. So, and another pshat is it says chacham. We'll read the gear so that's in agamar. But chachamim oimer and the chachamim say evarav shel odom meidin by the your limbs will testify shenemer va'atem edai noam Hashem va'anikel that. You yourself are going to testify. You, your body itself. So either the neshama is going to testify, either your body is going to testify, your malachim that are with you are going to testify, and then the first shot we saw was that the walls of the house are going to testify. So there's things around. You're never, the easy way to look at this is that you're never really by yourself. There's always something there with you that's able to tell HaKadosh Baruch Hu what is happening. If you need to imagine that, right? Just like if you imagine somebody else was looking at you, you'd be able to say, oh, I don't want to do it in front of somebody else. I'm embarrassed from that other person. If you need to, you can visualize these other, your malachim are looking at you. The stones of your house are looking at you. So if you can imagine that, oh, someone's looking, so mamela, I'm not going to do the avera. That's what the Gemara, so to speak, helpful way of viewing it in order to avoid doing averas. Okay, now, the next Mishnah. So now, finally, the Gemara is actually going back all the way to the idea we've been discussing, the karbonos that a person is supposed to bring. But the Gemara never really got back to the precise procedures, so now we're going to go back to the karbonos themselves that one is to bring as the karbon chagiga. It's the tricky part, that this Mishnah doesn't really flow from the Mishnah before directly, but it's really getting back into Masechtas Chagiga. That's really what it's doing over here. Anyway, so we're going to talk about a very specific point, which is Yosi ben Yehezer Oimer Shaloi L'Smach. So when you bring a carbon Chagiga, you don't do smicha on Yontif, as we'll see in the Gemara in a moment, because doing smicha is using the animal, and if it's not necessary, we don't want to use the animals on Yontif. However, Yosi ben Yochanan Omer L'Smach. So that's the first machlekes. It's that you should actually do the smicha. Now the Gemara continues with other sets of tanoim that had the same machlekes. Yeshua ben Prachya oimer shaloi lismoich. He says natu nasai harbeli oimer lismoich. He says yet to be soimach. Yehuda ben Tavoy oimer. Okay, remember this name. Yehuda ben Tavoy says shaloi lismoich. And Shimon ben Shetach. So his peer, he argues with Reb Shimon ben Shetach that says lismoich. Says you do the smicha. Shmaya Oma Lismoich. Shmaya says you should. Avtalya Nomer Shaloi Lismoich. And you shouldn't. And Rashi points out this was the first machlekes that they had. Shaloi, okay. And Hillel Umenachem Loi Nechleku. Hillel and Menachem, they were contemporaries. They didn't have a machlekes about this. However, Yotza Menachem, as the Gemara will explain, Menachem left. Nichnas Shammai came in. And then Shammai Yomer Shaloi Lismoich. So even though Hillel said Shammai said Shaloi Lismach, Hillel Amir Lismach. So originally it wasn't a machlekes. When Menachem was there, it wasn't a machlekes. But then eventually Hillel said to do smicha and Shammai said not to do smicha. Then the Mishnah continues, and now on the top of Tezayin and Mabez, the Mishnah continues, it says, Harishonim Hayu Nesiim, Vishniin Lahem Av Bezdin. So as you noticed, in each one of these we had a pair. We had contemporaries that were arguing on the point. So according to the Mishnah, the way to know who's who is that the first name that is mentioned in each one of the peers, the first one was the Nasi, and the second, the counterpart, the one who was arguing, was the Av Bezin. Okay, so that's what the Mishnah itself says, and then the Gemara is going to pick up on this. It says, so as the Mishnah concluded and said that the first person, the first Tana mentioned in each one of the sets is always referred to is the Nasi in the relationship. And the second Tana that argues in that relationship was the Av Bezdin of that generation. So the Gemara goes on that point. Tana Rabbana, Shloishim, Izugas HaRishonim, three of the first peers, the way it was set up, Sha'amru, Shaloi Lismach, that they each said not to do smicha, Vishnaim Izugas HaRishonim, and two of the peers that were mentioned first, Sha'amru Lismach, that they themselves said you should do smicha, so how you see him? In other words, the first Tana that's mentioned, they're the Nasi. V'shnayim lahem, v'shniyim lahem, and secondary to them, Avos Bezdin. Each one of them were the Av Bezdin. So the second one that's mentioned in the order of the Mishnah is going to be the Av Bezdin. Divrei Reb Meir, that's how Reb Meir learns, which again is similar to the way we have it in our Mishnah. However, the Chachamim argue and they say, no, there's one exception to the rule. Yehuda ben Tavai, so even though Yehuda ben Tavai was mentioned first, he was really the Av Bezdin. Shimon ben Shetach, who was mentioned second, Nasi, he's the Nasi. So we're going to switch around specifically with Rabbi Yehuda Tavai and Shimon ben Shetach, who was the Nasi and who was the Av Bezdin. Okay, so we have a machlekes. So now we're going to bring a Gemara, we're going to mention these names, and we're going to have to figure out who was the Nasi and who was the Av Bezdin in that story. So it's a slightly different halacha. Man Tana Lohadu Tana Rabbanu. So who would be the Tana, meaning is it the Chachamim or of Meir's version, who is the Tana of the following Mishnah? Amar Rabbi Yehuda ben Tavai. So again, Rabbi Yehuda ben Tavai, that according to the way we understand it, he was supposed to be the Nasi. Amar Rabbi Yehuda ben Tavai. Erev and Chama, I want to be forgiven, im loy haragti aid zoimim. That if I killed one single aid who was an aid zoimim. Okay, before we read the next words, just what is an aid zoimim? An aid zoimim is in general when you have two aidim that come and they testify about, it could be anything, could be about a life and death situation, but anything. And then after they finish their testimony, two other aidim come to Bezdin and say, Imanu Hayisim, we were with you when that event that you're testifying about occurred. So you can't possibly know the details and the information about that event because you were with us in a different location. So you couldn't. So that is, and then what happens is, so the halacha of Eid Zomimim, and this is what the Masechta Makos discusses, is what do you do with those Eidim that are now proven to be false liars because of the fact that they weren't there, they weren't present when the event that they're testifying about occurred. They were someplace else. So that's an eid zoimim. So normally you give them the punishment under normal circumstances, you give them the punishment that they would have happened or occurred to the person that they were testifying about. Okay, so in the case of Misa, if they were testifying that Reuven deserved Misa, and then afterwards Eidim come and say, you couldn't have seen Reuven do that act because you were someplace else, then the Eidim themselves are the ones that are going to get the Misa instead of the Reuven that they were originally testifying about. However, in Rabbi Yehuda ben Tavai's case, what happened was that when the Eidim came and said, you were someplace else, they weren't referring to both of the Eidim that testified, they were only referring to one of the two witnesses, and they said, you, not both of you, but you, one of you, was not there, you were someplace else. And as a result, Rabbi Yehuda ben Tavai went ahead and said, oh, he's an Eid Zoimim, and he went ahead and killed him. Okay, but why did he do this? He did this for a different reason. To make sure to clarify to show that the tzaddukim were wrong. This is a different issue about when does Eid Zoimim apply. They used to say Ein Eidim Zoimim Neherogin Ad Sheyahareg Anidoin. They hold that the scenario when you kill Eid Zoimim is only after the Reuven guy was killed. So in other words, Reuven, let's just keep the case very simple. Reuven killed Shimon. And then two Eidim come and testify that they saw this event happen. And then Eid Zoimimim come and say, no, you witnesses were someplace else. So what happened to Reuven? So according to the Tzedukim, let's go backwards. According to the Tzedukim, they hold what had happened was that after the Eidim testified, after the witnesses finished, they actually killed Bezdin, went ahead and killed Reuven. Because they testified that Reuven was a murderer. And then, after they killed Reuven, the second set of Edom showed up and said, you guys, how did you testify? You were someplace else. That's where the Tzedukim hold, that's how they interpreted the Torah, to mean that that's the scenario that you would kill Eid Zoimim. However, halachically, Chazal does not derash in that way, because we say, kasher zomam, the loy kasher osa. We hold punk fakert, that if the Reuven guy was already killed, it's too late. Whatever happened, happened, it's finished. Rather, the only time we would kill the Eidim that now are proven false, or now Eidim Zoimimim, is if you, after Bezdin Paskin, that Reuven deserved to die, but they actually didn't kill Reuven yet. And it's a very specific scenario that Edom swooped in right after the Psak Bezdin, but before Bezdin actually carried out the sentence. That's where the second set of Edom showed up and say, no, you can't do this because they weren't there. that's the scenario the Chazal hold, that's where the case of Eid Zoymim was. So, the reason why he killed this Eid Zoymim was because he wanted to show that the time to do the, to carry out the sentence on the Eidim, on the witnesses, not on the Reuven, on the witnesses is before they killed Reuven. As opposed to the, according to the Tzedukim, you'd only do this after you killed the Eidim. After you killed the original Reuven guy. Okay? So, that's what he did. But the problem was, so what was the problem with what Rabbi Yehuda ben Tavoy did? Is that he only killed one of the two Eidim. This, in his, usually Eid Zaymimim applied to both witnesses. In his scenario, they only had Eid Zaymimim about one of them. What?
Al-Pishnaim.
Right, it has to apply to both of the Eidim. That's what we hold. Okay, but now, let's get back to where we're trying to get over here. So remember, this story happened with Rabbi Yehuda ben Tavoy. So Amru Loi Shimon ben Shetach, remember his counterpart, his counterparty was Shimon ben Shetach said, Erev ben Chama, he says, no, I should be forgiven. Im Loi Shafachta Dam Naki. You killed an innocent person. Why? Sharei Amru Chachamim, this is the drasha that we were talking about. You kill Sharei Amru Chachamim, the Chachamim say, Ein Eidim Zomimim Neherogin Ad Sheyizumu Shneihem. That's what we're saying. Because really the halacha is, you would never kill any Eidim Zomimim until you're able to prove both of them, both witnesses, to be false. And similarly, it doesn't only apply in the context of death, and you also don't give malchus until again you prove both of the witnesses to be false. Anyway, so you also don't pay money until. So this whole case of Eid Zaymim only applies if the, it applies rather, the Gemara is making a point in whether you're dealing with death situations, malchus situations, or monetary situations. Anyway, okay, so that's the point. His point is that that was, he carried out injustice, that he did the wrong thing. That's what Rishon ben Shetach. Okay, but here, for the point of the story, the Gemara says, Miyad kibul olav Yehuda ben Tavoy. So immediately Rabbi Yehuda ben Tavoy realized his mistake, and he accepted She'ein Moira Halocha Ella Bifnei Shimon ben Shetach, that he would only paskin if Rabbi Shimon ben Shetach was around. Fine. And he would only, and in fact the Gemara says, Kol Yom of Shel Yehuda ben Tavoy, his whole lifetime after that event, he would go to the burial place, to the kever of this person, this aid that he killed, and everybody was able to hear a voice coming from that kever. Kisvurim, the people thought, Kisvurim Ha'am, everybody thought, Loimar, Shekoyle Shel Haragu, they thought they were hearing the sound of the person crying was the dead person. Amar Lahem, but Shimon, so Rabbi Yehuda ben Tavoy said, no, Koili Hu, it's really my voice that you're hearing. Teidu, you should know, and I could prove this, Shalom Achor Hu Meis, eventually I'm going to die, Ve'en Koili Nishma, and that voice is going to stop. So we see that it has nothing to do with the dead person, it's really my voice that you are hearing crying. However, the Gemara says, Amalei, before we get to the point, Amalei Rav Acha Berei de Rava, the Ravashi, Rav Acha said to Ravashi, the Dilma, that's not a riot just because when he dies, when Yehuda ben Tavoy dies, that you're going to stop hearing the sounds from the kever. It's not a riot that it's his voice, that it's Rabbi Yehuda ben Tavoy's voice, because Dilma Paisei. Maybe he appeased him. Maybe he no longer, the dead person no longer had reason to be crying, because Rabbi Yehuda ben Tavoy was able to appease him. Oyde Bedina Tavoy. Or maybe he took him to a din, and they straightened things out. In any event, so it's not a riot just because the sounds ceased, that therefore it was necessarily Yehuda ben Tavoy's point. Anyway, back to the big picture over here, why we're bringing this whole issue here, is we're trying to prove who is the Nasi and who is the Av Beis Din. So money. So who, money, huh? Who is the Tana, meaning was this Reb Meir's version or the Chachamim's version of who was the Tana, who was the Nasi and who was the Av Beis Din? Right, because we had a machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda ben Tavoy and Shimon ben Shetach, who was the Nasi and who was the Av Beis Din. So he says, Iyam Rav Shloime Reb Meir, if you learn this Mishnah, that it was Reb Meir that according to Reb Meir sheet to Amar Shimon ben Shetach Av Beis Din, that Shimon ben Shetach was the Av Beis Din, Rabbi Yehuda ben Tavoy Nasi, and Rabbi Yehuda ben Tavoy was the Nasi. Hainu Dekal Meiri Halacha Befnei Shimon ben Shetach. That's how he was until that story actually happened. Rabbi Yehuda ben Tavoy was paskening. And the only way he could have paskin, because normally, okay, just as a background for a second, we know the rule is that a Talmud is not allowed to paskin in front of his Rebbe. That whenever there's a Rebbe Talmud in the same area, same city even, the Talmud is not supposed to paskin without the permission of the Rebbe, in front of the Rebbe is not supposed to. So, being the Av Bezdin in this relationship, Av Bezdin versus Nasi, the Av Bezdin is, so to speak, the second, is the Talmud. So, as an Av Bezdin, you would never paskin in front of your Rebbe. So we see, by the fact that Yehuda ben Tavoya was paskining, must be that he was the Rebbe. Because if he was the Talmud, he wouldn't be paskening. So that's why the Gemara says, must be, the fact that he was paskening in front of Shimon ben Shetach must be that he was the Talmud, that he was the Abbez, and like Rav Meir says that Rabbi Yehuda ben Tavoy was the Talmud. Am I saying this backward? No. I am? I'm saying it backward. See, Rav Meir's version of the relationship was, like Rav Meir said, that Rabbi Yehuda ben Tavoy was the Nasi, and that's why he was paskening, and Shimon ben Shetach was the Av Bezdin, and that's why, and it wasn't a problem, he was able to pasken. So that makes sense if you learn like Rav Meir's version. Eli'i Amr Rabbanon, but if you want to say that this Mishnah comes out like Rabbanon, da Amr Yehuda ben Tavoy Av Bezdin, Rabbi Yehuda ben Tavoy was only the Av Bezdin, Shimon ben Shetach Nasi, and Shimon ben Shetach was the Nasi, Av Bezdin b'fnei Nasi mi Meir Halacha. So was he paskin the halacha? Because it says, oh, he stopped paskining. So it must be that until that point he was paskining. So therefore, it must be like Rav Meir's version, that therefore he must have been the Nasi. So the Gemara says, loy. Now, even though you could learn this Mishnah like the Chachamim's version, and like this. My kibbul alav, when he says, now I'm going to stop paskining, what he meant like this. The Ka'omar lets the Rufe that he's going to join in the same Bezdin. Meaning, really all along, like the Chachamim say, Yehuda ben Tavoy is the Av Bezdin. And he never paskined by himself. So what did he mean that he was going to be, I'm now going to stop? Not that he was going to stop. He was going to now stop even joining as part of a Bezdin. As the Gemara says, Afilu tzurufei nami loim etzar finon. I wouldn't even join with his Bezdin. I felt I was so inadequate and so I came to the wrong conclusion that I'm not even worthy of being on a Bezdin, even when Shimon ben Shetach is there and I'm allowed to paskin. That's what he was stopping. Not that he was paskining on his own, like again, in the Chachamim's version of the world. Not that he was paskining on his own. He was always paskining in front of Shimon ben Shetach. But in front of Shimon ben Shetach, he was able to make this mistake. And he said, now that I see that I made this kind of mistake, I'm not even going to paskin, even with Reb Shimon ben Shetach around to fix my mistake. What? That Rashi says, Loi misarfin, leishe bedin. To sit in El Bahad Shimon ben Shetach, that I was going to sit with Reb Shimon ben Shetach, and now even that I'm not going to do. I'm not. No. That even that he wouldn't do. That's what Rashi is saying. That until now he was willing to paskin if he was sitting with Reb Shimon ben Shetach, and now that he saw that he made this mistake, even that he wouldn't. He wasn't willing. He wasn't willing to do.
No, it's not.
Okay, then the Gemara brought, when it was bringing the Machloikas in the Mishnah, it says, Yotze Menachem Nechla Shammai. The Menachem left, and then Shammai entered and had an argument, and then it was a Machloikas between Shammai and Hillel. Now, Lehechon Yotze, where did Menachem go? Abaye Omer Yotze L'tar B'Sroi, he went off. He went to do something wrong. Rav Omer Yotze L'Avodas HaMelech. Actually, not necessarily doing something wrong, so he went to work for the king, so he wasn't really part of the Beis Medrash anymore. And there are Mepharshim that say, actually, that what he did, that they're not arguing. What he did wrong was he went to work for the king. They're both, one's a further explanation of what he was doing. Yes, exactly. So it wasn't necessarily, the bad wasn't really bad, like it wasn't off the derech, but he spent his time doing other things. Tanya Nami Hochi, we learn a verse like this, Yotze Menachem L'Avodis HaMelech, that Menachem went to serve for the king, V'yotze Imai Shmoinim Zugais Talmidim, and with him went 80 pairs of students, of Talmidim, Levushim Sirukin, wearing fancy clothing, wearing the striped clothing that was fancy for the king. So they went to work for the king, because the king appreciated who they were. Not necessarily bad as in, they went off the derech, but they went to do something else. Amar Rav Shimon bar Abba, Amar Rav Yochanan, the name of Rav Yochanan. Loi lo malti shvus kalabay necha. Because this whole machlekes over here of whether we could do smicha or not is really a shvus. It's really, because it's not usher min atayra to lean on an animal. It's only Chazal said you shouldn't do it because if you do it, you're violating Shabbos in a manner that's not appropriate for Shabbos. But it's not really something that's usher. So we see there's a whole machlekes over here whether or not you're allowed to lean on the animal. So you see that a shvus should not be something you take lightly. Sharei smicha ein ela mishum shvus. The whole iser of doing smicha on an animal is only an iser shvus. The nechleku ba gedoyli ador, and that's what they spent their time arguing on it. So the Gemara says pshita. It's obvious that you don't need to point this out. Obviously, they're arguing about a shvus. So the Gemara answers shvus mitzvah itzrichlei. So the chiddush was that even though this is a shvus that's aser, but I'm doing it for the sake of a mitzvah, you might have thought, oh, for the sake of a mitzvah it's mutter, and even on that they have a machlekas. So the Gemara says hanami pshito. That's exactly. That's also where they argue. They argue about whether the concept of a mitzvah overrides the fact that it's an iser shvus. So the Gemara answers, the point is like this. Not that they're arguing whether it's an issue on Yontif, because smicha is only a shvus on Yontif. There's actually a way to look at this to say that they're only arguing whether a person should be doing smicha on the animal itself, in general. Forget about the fact that it's Yontif. Should you be leaning on the animal? You might have thought that that's what they're arguing about. No, that they're only arguing about the shvus because it's on yontif, and that's the point we're trying to make. That they're not arguing about whether or not to do smicha. They're arguing about whether the problem of yontif, that there's a shvus on yontif, whether that's an issue. That's something we need to take into consideration. Amar Rabbi Bar Chama, Shma Mina. From here we learn smicha b'kol choychoych be'inoy, that when you do smicha, when you lean on the animal, it's with all your strength. You lean as hard as you can. The ishak adayduchloy be'inoy b'kol choychoych, because if you're not really using all of your strength, Maika Ovid, listen, Mike, what's the problem that you're leaning on the animal? You're leaning up against the animal. If it's not something that you're really applying pressure to, then it's not really a shvus. So that's how the Gemara understands. It's only a shvus because you're actually literally leaning on the animal and you're using the animal as support. So, but the Gemara says, "Meisvei, I'll ask you a contradiction." It says, "Daber b'nei Yisrael." It says to talk to b'nei Yisrael v'samach, you should do smicha. And we darshan from this b'nei Yisrael soimchin ve'im b'nei Yisrael soimchus. So we understand from this a separate drasha that only men do smicha. Women do that. The Torah, the obligation of the Torah, the mitzvah to do smicha doesn't apply to women. However, Rabbi Yosi and Rabbi Shmuel, they argue and they say, no, b'nei Yisrael soimchus reshus. They say no. Even the girls, women, if they want to do smicha, they can do smicha, even though they're using the animal. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Yosi, Sachli Abba Elozer, the father, Abba Elozer, that's his name, told me, Pam Achas Hayu Lanu Egel Shel Zivchei Shlomo. I remember one time we had a carbon, that we were bringing a carbon shlomin, Ve'avinu La'ezras Noshin, and we brought it to the women section, the Samchu Alav Noshin, and we see that the women did smicha. Not because they have to. To make the women feel good, to let them feel like they were part of it. We're not going to go there. This was on a weekday, yeah. But the point is that the women were doing smicha. Because we just darshined, it's a whole issue whether or not the women should be doing smicha at all. Because the mitzvah was really only given to the men. And if you're not supposed to do smicha, you're being mishtamish b'kotchim. The animal belongs to Hekdesh, and now when we talk about leaning, that means without the animal I'd fall over. That means the animal is supporting me. The animal is supporting me, that means I'm using kachim to help me. And it's me'ilah if I'm using kachim without permission. So how are the women allowed to do smicha? These sakadad of smicha b'kol choychoy be'inon. And if you say that the concept of smicha is that they're literally leaning on it with all their strength, b'shem nachas ruach the noshim of dinan avoida b'kachim, just to make the women happy, we're going to let them use kachim. We're going to let them use the animal that they're not. It's meila. They're not allowed to use kachim. Elav shmamino loy beinu b'kol koychoy. So must be from this story we see the fact that they actually did this in the Beis Hamikdash, that they let the women do smicha. Must be that you don't really have to use all your strength. It wasn't necessary to use all your strength. The owner of the animal, the owner of the carbon does smicha, not the kayanim.
The smicha wasn't necessary.
The premise was that we started with that it must be b'kol koychoy, which is why it was asur al shvus. That was the whole problem in the first place. That it's only a shvus if you're actually literally leaning on the animal. And here we see, by the fact that the women are doing it, that they weren't leaning with their whole koychoy, with all their strength. If they weren't leaning with all their strength, so what's the shvus? So it seems to be a contradiction. Remember, the Gemara is asking this as a mitzvah. The Gemara is asking this as a contradiction. We see in this story that they weren't really leaning with all their strength, and if so, then there shouldn't be a shvus over here. It shouldn't be also to do this on Yontif. So the Gemara's answer is like this. No, like we said before, really you do need all your strength, and that's why it's going to be a shvus. The Omar Lahu Afku Yodaihu. What happened was over there, the story, you have to get the story correct. When he brought it to the ladies section, what he said is that float your hands. Not that the women weren't actually doing real smicha the way we understand smicha. They were kind of just putting their hands above, you know, the way they bench lecht. They were putting their hands above the animal, and they weren't really leaning on the animal. So the Gemara says, 1 second, that doesn't fit the story. Don't say that smicha benoshim is a rishos. Has nothing to do with the fact that they are or they are not. Typically, the analyst smicha klal. The reason why he did it is because the women weren't really doing smicha at all. We understand smicha is leaning on the animal, and they were just floating their hands up there on top of the animal to make it look like they were leaning on the animal, but they weren't really doing smicha. So it was fine to do that. So why don't you say the story correctly? So the Gemara says like this. You're right. It's true. They weren't really doing smicha. Really, that's true. Chodo, the lesson of smicha klal. First of all, they weren't doing smicha. They weren't really doing smicha. Va'oid, and even if they want to say that they were doing what they think was smicha, k'deilas v'snachas ruas l'noshim. The reason why we allow that to happen is because we wanted them to feel like they were part of it. It was their carbon. We wanted to give them feel like they were part of it. So mamela, we allowed that. But really, the bottom line is, in order to do smicha, you have to do smicha properly, b'kol koichai. And the women, what they did was really not smicha at all. But even if you want to say that they were part of it, the reason why we did that in the first place was to give them nachas ruach so that they should feel like they were part of the carbon. Let me just... What's that? Okay. So, move on. Amar Rav Papa. So Rav Papa says, Shma mino stodin asurin. So over here... From here we see that when we talk about leaning on an animal, we're talking about any part of the animal. It doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be on top of the animal. Any side of the animal is also equally awesome. Because if you hold that leaning on the side of the animal as opposed to being on top of the animal would be permissible, why don't you just do the smicha, which just requires full leaning. So I could do that. I could apply my full pressure. I could lean against the animal in a way that I would otherwise fall down. But I'll do it on the side, which is not asur. So the Gemara says, it must be that even on the side of the animal is also just as equally awesome. Now, just one line on the top of Yud Zayin Amud Aleph. The Gemara says, no. Rav Ashi Amar Afilu Teimet Stodim Mutar. It could be really that leaning on the side of the animal would be mutar. So then you say, oh, so why don't I do smicha on the side? The Gemara answers, Kol Dubahadi Gaba Kagaba Domi. What is considered stodim? You're misinterpreting or defining what stodim is. Rav Ashi understands that as long as it's on the same level of the height, at the same height as the back of the animal, that is considered on top of. So even though the head might be is above the back of the animal, if I'm leaning against the side of the head, which is where you do smicha at the head of the animal, so even though it's on the side, since it's above the level of the back of the animal, that's considered on top of the animal. So mamela, any leaning that I do on the side of the animal, and since I'm dealing with the head, and the head is always above the back of the animal, that's considered on top of the animal. So there is no, your eitzah, your advice of, oh, I could get around this problem by leaning on the side instead of doing it on top of, our definition of on top of the animal will include anything in the head region. And therefore, even leaning on the side of the animal is considered on top of. And if I'm on top of the animal, then that's considered full smicha. If I'm doing full smicha, then if it's not permissible, I'm doing something that would otherwise be considered a shvus on Yontif. The Mela, that's the machlekes of our Mishnah, whether or not to do this kind of shvus on Yontif is going to be permissible or not permissible. We'll stop over here.